The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hey, it's George Brockner back with you here. Hour two of four on 710 KNUS. We, of course, are going to be here till 10 o'clock. Then we go Kirk Prager Gorka through that 10 to 3 slot. And then we go live and local with Deb Flora at 3. And then at 4 o'clock, Stephen Tubbs right back here in the saddle. I think both of them super thankful we don't do naked radio, as suggested by one of the texters. And as Billy had referenced, some guy in the past used to come in and do the evening show in his birthday suit. I just wouldn't want to sit in that seat. There just aren't pants thick enough to make the cooties not tingle right there. You couldn't do it. 303-696-1971 is the number, but no need to call right now because, of course, we have on the line with us a superstar in wardrobe in her own right, Sherry Pipe. How are you?
Oh, I'm wonderful this morning, George.
Sherry, I know
you
that...
You know, the images of naked radio are just... Yeah, sorry.
Now, listen, if I look like Ryan Reynolds, that might be a better deal. You know what I mean? Like, maybe that's worthy of it. I don't look like Ryan Reynolds. Not yet. I mean, I'm looking through laser resurfacing, steroids, and a whole bunch of liposuction. I'm looking to have myself put into that condition, but it won't be quick and it won't be painless. Sherry, have you ever worked at a place where they insisted that you wear a certain kind of clothing, a dress code of any sorts?
Not hardcore, no. I mean, I've never worked anywhere where I was just kind of free willy, could wear whatever I wanted and they didn't care. I mean, I've been in journalism for, you know, 25, 30 years. So always had to dress professional and not out of place, but not an actual dress code. No.
Like, when you're a member of the media, and I know they used to have these awesome, powerful press things you could put on your dashboard and basically you could park right like in the middle of the front yard of a school and no one would care. But those days are gone. Did you ever have to wear the funny hat with the little press card stuck in the top of it? So people are like, right this way, best wife.
No, I never had to wear those. And you know, those days aren't completely gone. We still do have those little press plates that allow us to park places that most people can't. But
how do you get them?
The hat.
How do you get them? I want some of those press plates. I am the press.
You can get yours through the Colorado Broadcasters Association. I know you guys are members.
I am.
We get ours.
I have a little. Yep, I have the little ID card that they give you, you know, each year. But I don't know what to use it for.
Yeah, I have the little ID card too. I almost never use it. I don't know what I would use it for. You know, the press plate doesn't. It doesn't. It's not like we use it a lot. I mean, I don't know that I can honestly say when was the last time I used it. It used to come in really handy up until a couple of years ago. It allowed the press to park literally on the sidewalk right in front of the state capitol.
Yeah, I had one
remember
of those.
Remember that, when you could park right on the sidewalk?
I had one of those press plates for a number of years, and yeah.
What?
It was free parking anywhere.
Hold on, it's like a license plate that's on your car?
It's about a third of the size of a regular license plate, normally done in black and white, and you'd put it on your dashboard is normally what you do.
What?
And so you just put it up on the dashboard.
And it has a little year sticker every year. They give you a different sticker every year.
Yeah. Do you have one of those now, Sherry? You're down at the Capitol all the time.
I do have one of those now. I just recently sticker just a couple, 2-3 months ago. We were a little bit behind on getting our sticker this year, but I have a brand new 2023 sticker on it, and I do still have it. They don't let you park on the sidewalk down there anymore, and it doesn't really work for the Capitol much anymore. But if you're in a predicament, I mean, it's probably for people like me that have very specific genres that they cover, like state legislature, it doesn't really mean anything. For people who maybe cover traffic accidents or things like that where you need to get in to see something, it probably would still be very beneficial. It's not as beneficial as it used to be.
I'm bummed because the little cards they give you, and I know this isn't the topic we asked you to come on and talk about, they look like I could have made them at a printer in my house. So like I envision showing this to someone in the future, like I need to have access. I'm a member of the press. And they're just like, no, I don't believe it. I mean, it just looks so incredible.
And I had this conversation with somebody one other time because, you know, when I was at the Greeley Tribune, we had our own specific badges that said Greeley Tribune on them. And they were literally made in-house at the Greeley Tribune. You know, I'm pretty sure the Denver Post probably makes their own. Colorado Sun probably makes their own. Everybody makes their own. The thing is they really, they identify you as media, which is good if you need to be identified as media, because you do get into certain places that, like, you know, off the top of my head, like I said, traffic accidents, crime scenes, those kinds of places where you can at least get closer to talk to somebody. But that being said, they're not going to get you into Denver Bronco game. They're not going to get you into Denver Nugget game.
Forget
you know,
it.
Those, yeah, those you have to come with their own special little passes. They're not going to get you in to see the president. You know, everybody has their own special media
credentials. Then it doesn't
now,
matter.
So.
I mean, unless I can use it to go have my own interview with Jokic. I mean, who cares? Or, hey, I'm supposed to interview Jamal Murray during the half. Can you please let me?
No,
if I can't,
those aren't
who cares?
Do any good.
Sherry,
no.
I'm so sorry to have derailed you with that, but we've had so texts. And I don't know if you heard the coonskin cap conversation, but it looks like there may be one coming to the station here, and Billy's going to end up wearing it. We may take turns with it. I don't know if that's really hygienic or not, but we're going to trade coonskin caps. You have been active and prolific in your writing. It's hard to know where to start, but I do like this idea. You just got done wrapping up a 120-day session. The only time it's been worse than that, I think, is during the COVID, where somehow they figured out a way to say, well, let's actually make the 120-day session last 6 months by creating a big buffer in the middle there, and 120 days doesn't actually mean 120. Well, we're back to 120 days. But you've talked about there is an effort now to try to make it even shorter.
Oh, and let's hope and pray that it comes to fruition. Yeah, it's an effort by my employer, John Caldera, over at the Independence Institute. And we know John likes to put things on the ballot. So when John puts something on the ballot, it generally passes. It would not be out of, you know, I keep hearing people like the Speaker of the House, Julie McCluskey, talk on television about how important it is to have all this great work that gets done in 120 days. The state legislature proved at the end of the session that if they want a bill through, they can get it through in 7 days. They proved
That's right.
They can get one through in 3 days. The thing is they spend the first 90 days of the 120 that they're in session taking everything the right way, doing bills the proper way, letting people testify on them, letting your legislators have debate on them on the floor.
Right, right.
Actually working it the way it's supposed to. And then the final 30 days, they go, oh, all these bills that we've held on to for the last
the
3 months.
The important ones, yeah.
Yeah, the ones that we know you guys don't like and you don't want. We're not going to shove those through. 90 days, which is what the new law would be, and it would be 90 consecutive days, not like you mentioned during COVID when we decided to, you know, maneuver through and end up with like 300 days. 90 consecutive days, they can get it done. There are many states that have 90 days. There are states that have 60 days. There are states that only have every other year.
Oh.
I think Texas
is an every other year state. Yeah.
Yes. This is not rocket science. What the legislature does in 120 days, they can do in 90, and they can do much less damage. And people would actually have an opportunity to, oh, I don't know, maybe stakeholder some of these bills.
If you had to have in your community a raging alcoholic with a loaded handgun, at least, I mean, would you say I'd like one every year or every other year? I mean, you don't want one at all. But honestly, if you had to, every other year sounds good.
Every other year sounds great. You know, 60 days every other year. I think Wyoming does 60 days every other year. Or somebody nearby us does 60 days every other year. I mean, if you think about that, that's 4 years for us. It takes them 8 years to get what we do in four.
It's a lot of political hubris, though, because the people that are in power are like, my God, what I do is so critically important. That's why I'm here. I mean, voters sent me here to do the great work on behalf of Colorado. I must do something. You know what I mean? Like, I must have 5 bills to pass. I wish John would tackle that, too. Like, every legislator can have 1 bill. You know what I mean? Like, you can have one. And then let's find out what's truly important, because right now the idea that 100 of these people running around crazy with at least 5, because the majority, the leadership there can grant you extra to have at least 5 bills. So 500 legislative fixes every year. That's what we need. What?
Right. No. Yeah. And late bills need to be cut off at about, I don't know, 60 days. A late bill should not be, the definition of late bill should not be you know, 3 days before session ends.
Now, for this thing to pass, because it's going to require an amendment to the Constitution, it has a higher threshold.
Yes, it does. So, first of all, the signatures, which is about 125,000, the signatures have to come, I think, 1 or 2% from all of the 30-some-odd, 60-some-odd Senate districts, however many.
35.
From the 35 Senate districts that are in the state of Colorado, there has to be a certain percentage, 1 or 2% of the votes has to come from each inside, or signatures has to come from each inside those districts. Then when it gets to the ballot, it has to pass with 55% plus one vote.
Listen, these guys can figure that out. I know that. The dudes they use to get the signatures, they usually nail it every single time. This isn't one of those other goofy efforts where they show up with a box full of 10 signatures. These guys get it done. If this thing gets on the ballot, I got to believe it passes. I mean, how many people are out there thinking, no, 120 days is, unless you're a legislator, nobody's thinking, I want these guys to have more time to think of more laws to impact our lives. That's a brilliant move. I hope John's able to get that thing done. Let's shift to some other stuff, though, other ballot measures that are coming. The governor and the legislature have gotten together to really take a bite out of the surge in property taxes that you and I are going to feel if you're a property owner. What's going on with that?
Oh, a lot. That whole, you know, Senate Bill 303 is just, it's a dumpster fire. It's a mess. You know, I listened the other morning, and I know you had Michael Fields on from Advance Colorado, and I think he spoke about it best. It has multiple topics in it, which is another one of those things that talks about, you know, you're only supposed to have one subject. And I did my follow-up story on this. I spoke with Michael, and I think Michael said it best when he said, you know, if a citizen were to take this particular ballot measure to the title board, the title board would laugh them out of title board because it's got so many subjects in it. They'd be like, go back to the drawing board and bring us one subject. You know, that's a problem. Another problem is, the legislature decided to name, or not name, but put a ballot number on it. I mean, they embedded in the bill that this is going to be Proposition HH.
Which was genius.
Right. So now it's like, okay, and that's supposed to be up to the Secretary of State's office. So it kind of made some complication for Michael and his group when they filed the challenge. Okay, so do we have 5 days after the bill passes to file the challenge, or do we have 5 days after the governor signs the bill to file the challenge? Because there's a law that says you only have 5 days to challenge it. But this is unprecedented in how this has ever made the ballot.
It's weird that they did it that way. Why do you think they chose to do that instead of just referring it the old-fashioned way?
That is a really good question, and one that I've been racking my brain trying to figure out. I don't know. I mean, I guess maybe to assert authority. You know, now I will say thank you for doing it that way to one point, because it's given great conversation for when it does finally start, you know, we do finally start talking about it, because it's been nicknamed Preparation HH, not Proposition HH, Preparation HH.
And it doesn't really take the sting out of it either.
No, it doesn't. It really doesn't. You know, so it's just, there is, I don't know. I wish I could answer that question. I think because they think they can. We have never seen a legislature that has been so emboldened to just look at the state of Colorado voters and go, what are you going to do about it?
Yeah, and
you
we
know,
think you're
and
dumb.
Just keep
we
pushing
think you're
the
dumb.
Button. Yeah, you know, you go back to Polis vetoed the Wolf bill, right?
Yeah, that's
and
right.
And he says, yeah, and he says he vetoed the Wolf bill because, that, you know, the state of Colorado voters spoke, and this is what they wanted. Well, the state of Colorado voters also said they didn't want 2,500-foot setbacks.
Yeah, that's right.
When
that didn't stop
oil
them.
And gas drilling. And he signed Senate Bill 281. You know, it's just a blazing disregard for the Colorado voter right now. I've never seen anything like it.
I worry, though, and we talked about this on the radio a couple weeks ago when it finally happened, the Preparation HH bill, and that is the idea that they're banking on the fact that Colorado voters, even Kyle Clark pointed this out, are stupid. And my thought is, maybe we are. You know what I mean? Maybe there's just enough low information voters out there that they're going to vote for this, in part because the legislature's special rules on language they can put in the ballot, where it starts off with, do you want to cure cancer and save puppies from burning buildings? And then later on, and by later on, I mean not even in the actual ballot language, but later in the blue book, they want to like asterisk something, and they're like, your Tabor refunds will be gone at the end of 10 years. You know, something like that. Like it's the last minute warning on a drug that you take may cause bleeding in your stool or something like that. I don't know how they're going to get away with it, but if they do, it makes me feel so much worse than I do right now about our voters after November.
For the most, and I agree with you, and I constantly talk about low information voters and how they scare me. But for the most part, if you look back in history on Colorado referendums and ballot measures and whatnot, even leading into the last election, for the most part, voters have been pretty smart when it comes to yes and no. It's the names and the people they put in office that they've been even more low information on. I think there will be enough opposition to this particular proposition that what scares me is the amount of money that's going to go into this.
From the union people alone, the CEA is going to crush it.
Yeah, the campaign money is going to be unbelievable. But I think there's going to be enough opposition to this that we probably, hopefully, I am cautiously optimistic, going to be able to reach that voter and say no. And you know, you said it already, and I'll repeat it, even Kyle Clark. You know, I think when you have people like Kyle Clark, who generally tends to be favored by most of the low-information voters in the state of Colorado, listening to him, hopefully that will help as well. You know, I just think there's enough opposition that we will be cautiously I'm cautiously optimistic this won't pass.
This error that they've created, fixable, I imagine. I asked Michael about that off air, and he says, hey, he thinks they might be able to fix it. But the other stuff that you've pointed out, the multiple topics, and we're supposed to have single subjects in bills. It's what makes our state legislature and our laws better than Congress, because Congress, as you know, can jam 8 million things under one title. But here you have to have single subject stuff. My concern is this ends up in a court where, because we've only had one Bill Owens in the last half century, just about every judge that will review this is a judge that is not a Republican or wasn't appointed by a Republican. Doesn't mean they can't do the right thing. Doesn't mean they can't do a good job. And we've seen that elsewhere. But it does give me some concerns, especially as we head to that much more political Supreme Court.
There's no doubt. And I have no confidence at all that this bill will make it to the ballot in any form other than what it's in right now.
Oh, that's awful.
I fully believe it'll make it there the way it is, and it's going to take a lot of education on the part of the opponents to make people just vote no. As much as I love the fact that Michael and his group have taken on and challenging this, and I really hope that there's a judge out there that does right by it, we have seen time and time again when we've gone to court, I mean, over the Kevin Priola recall, over Tabor, over fees, over everything. It's over and over and over again. The courts never rule in our favor. They just don't. And you're right. It's because we've had one Bill Owens in, you know, five decades. So I have no confidence whatsoever that this will come out of there it looking any better than it does now. It scares me. It really scares me.
We did beat back CC, which was just a couple few years ago, which was another effort to blow up Tabor and some other things. And I was happy to be a part of that. I think I was the co-commodore or whatever of that organization. And it was great to crush that. I think people defeated it pretty soundly once they got the information. I think that same thing is coming for HH. But it's just interesting to me that at a time when we've seen record, almost windfall revenues for a lot of different reasons, I mean, our state budget has blown up in ways nobody could have predicted 10 years ago, that they keep coming back and saying, it's just not enough. By God, we need more money. And now they're going to use this little game where they waited till the last second to offer up this particular bill, I guess, if you will. And then they rammed it through on a party line vote. And the idea here is to say, hey, folks, I know you're under a great deal of pain and we could have done a bunch of different things to address it. But here's how we're going to do it. We're going to take money out of your back pocket. We're going to put it in your front pocket and then take away every other Tabor refund you're ever going to have. Let's hug it out. I mean, that's just how this craziness.
That's exactly what it is. And, you know, and it's OK. So I'm really sorry that we convinced you several years ago to get rid of Gallagher. You know, we kind of knew this was coming down the road, but hey, whatever. We're sorry about that. So now that your property taxes went up by $2,000 a year, here's what we're going to do. We're going to get, you're going to have to pay that $2,000, but we're going to give you a $600 check that you would have gotten anyway, but we're going to give it to you. And, but we're only going to give it to you for the next few years because we need that money to make sure that, you know, we can introduce more wolves to our state that nobody will give us anyway.
And we need to keep sending money to the Colorado Education Association. They need more money.
So that they can pass more resolutions that say things like, oh, capitalism is bad.
Right. Look, that's the problem. I think everyone acknowledges that our kids don't do as well in school unless the union is thriving. When the union thrives, our kids succeed. I think that's actually on their T-shirt, something like that. Before we let you go, Sherry Pfeiffer with the Independence Institute, also Edgewater is thinking about doing something with their minimum wages. What's going on?
You know, I don't have an update as far as the last story that I did, but Edgewater wants to play catch up with the city of Denver, and they want to take their minimum wage up drastically. I think it's well over $20 an hour within the next few years so that they can play catch up with Denver. And I unfortunately don't have an update on that. I need to actually look into that. The legislature kept me busy the last few
weeks. Oh, I get it. I totally get it.
Yeah, I haven't been able to look into that. But last I knew, it was still hanging in there. And Edgewater wants to put all of their local small businesses out of business so that they can, you know, they can match up with Denver.
Sherry Pfeiffer, Complete Colorado, page 2. Check it out. I think you're generating something now every hour. Is that what it is?
There's a lot, yeah. It feels like there is so much that goes up on and on and on. We definitely stay busy, there's no doubt.
Well, listen, we're going to have you back on in the near future. I just love the conversations. Keep fighting the good fight and telling all the stories that the rest of the media just won't tell.
Thanks, my friend. I appreciate it.
Take care.
Have a good one.
That's Sherry Pfeiffer with Complete Colorado. Page 2, check it out. Independence Institute. Also, just for those of you tracking, no dress code for them. Now, I get it. I get it. It's not the same visual media that we're on right now, but it's something. It's something. And we've continued to have texts come in. At some point, I think we're going to get a coonskin cap, and one or both, Billy and I, are going to wear that thing. Listen, before we cut away for this last break of this first half of the hour, I do want to tell you about the Western Conservative Summit. It's coming up. It's kind of a big deal. We're a huge part of it. We're sponsors of this thing, along with the Western Conservative Summit. You've heard of them. It's going to take place on the 9th and the 10th of June, and it's going to feature some big, big hitters. Everyone from Lauren Boebert to Josh Hawley, and I think Ken Buck is going to be there, and a ton in between. That's kind of awesome. You can be part of it. Check it out at 710knus.com. I think there's a place to get tickets there. You can also, let's see, Jenna Ellis will be there, Frank Gaffney, Tulsi Gabbard, Eric Metaxas. I mean, those are some big, big names that are on there. Check it out. Be there. I won't see you on Friday there, but Saturday I think I'm going to be there. I don't think I'm doing anything at this one, but I'll be walking around trying to pickpocket people and stuff like that. Hey, stick around. We'll get to you and our other topics of the day here when we come back. It's George Brockler on The George Show, 710 KNUS. George Brockler back with you here, 710 KNUS. I do want to talk to you about the topics of the morning, including, if you haven't done it yet, go out there and Google Adidas trans swimsuit. You're going to get a ton of stories on there. Look at the images in particular of how Adidas is advertising some of these things. We'll talk about that more in the 8 o'clock hour. There's something, though, that's pretty important that's taken place that does impact us right here at Salem. You may have heard that automakers across the country, maybe even the world, I don't know, are thinking about discontinuing AM radio inside the cars. Now, if that was, hey, we're going to discontinue AM radios and now everybody's going to get $500 off their car, I might have a different opinion. The station wouldn't. I would. That's not how it's going to be. You will just lose the ability to have AM radio and your car won't cost any less. In fact, it'll continue to cost more. Now, that obviously sucks for a medium that in part relies upon the AM radio signal that you're listening to right now. Some of you are listening on the app. That's great. It's super clear on the app. That will always continue. Some of you are watching on the Rumble. That's fantastic, too. That's why I'm stuck wearing this collared shirt. But the bigger issue here is, what do we do with the vast majority of folks who listen to Salem that don't do it on the podcast or the app or the Rumble, but they do it in their car the way like I do it when I'm driving around and I have good AM signal. Now, Billy just knows a lot more about the AM stuff than I do. Tell me, why should anyone else care?
There's a problem with traditional radio FM broadcasting. AM broadcasting, okay, it's amplitude modulation versus frequency modulation, and it has to do with the different size.
Wait a minute,
of
is that
waves.
What AM stands for?
Yeah, amplitude modulation. Yeah, that's what it stands for.
I was this years old when I learned that.
So basically, it's different. The waveforms are much longer. The FM is up and down. That's why you get a richer signal. They're much tighter and compact. Imagine it like an EKG of you running versus an EKG of you sitting and relaxing. Yeah. So they're different. It's basically they're different amplitudes.
I've only seen one of those. Yeah.
And the reason AM travels so far is because of the waveform. But that's also why you lose it when you get underneath large things of concrete or steel, because it doesn't get through those as well as FM does. And what they have a problem with right now, starting in the EVs, the electronic vehicles, is the electronics inside of it, especially the battery, generates so much of an electrical field, it interferes with the reception of an AM signal. Huh? It becomes staticky. It goes... Shh. Now, it is fairly easy to, and in fact, your radio in your car right now actually has some shielding so that your battery and other electronics in the car don't create any interference for the radio.
Like a radio condom.
Yep, exactly. So it can be done, but it is expensive, especially if you're trying to prevent the EV electronics from interfering with the AM signal. And obviously, the companies don't want to spend the extra money in order to shield the car radios from AM. So a lot of them have just dropped it. I think it's like BMW, Volvo, a few others have dropped in their EVs AM radio altogether. Now, Ford, the reason everyone's getting scared about this, especially legislators, is because Ford has announced in the future they're dropping it from all models, internal combustion engine and
what's the reasoning
EVs.
For that?
Money. It's something less that they have to put into the car. And so that's all it is it's just going to make their cost to produce the car smaller. That's all it is. That's the only reason. Now, in Europe, they've been dropping AM radios out of the cars for years.
Really?
But that's because they are on the DAB format, which is a digital audio broadcast. It's a digital signal rather than a frequency signal. It's a different way of transmitting radio, and it actually is very, very efficient. But the excuses we're getting here in America is,
well, you know, a lot of the radio stations like this one, they can stream. So many people just stream things in the car. We don't need to have an actual radio.
Because, of course, we know one thing that never happens is the internet connection and Wi-Fi never go down.
Never
happens. It never stalls.
Not once ever.
No, not once ever. It's fantastically reliable. But the larger safety problem is that if we don't have AM, is it's difficult to get any kind of an emergency signal across a large geographic area. It would be very difficult if you were having, you know, flooding in some of the smaller towns, some of the mountain towns, to get an FM signal all the way there. AM signals are very efficient. In fact, if you have in your radio careers and your radio browsing, if you ever come across a radio station that has only three call letters, we are KNUS. Four letters. Yeah. We have two in town that have three letters. One of them a competitor of ours, and we know they're the home of the Broncos and the Rockies. It's KOA, the King of Agriculture. That's what it's originally stands for.
Really?
Yeah.
Never heard of it.
They are what are called clear channel stations, not the company. They're designated by the government as clear channel stations, meaning at night, everybody around them has to power down their transmitters, and that's why the signal at night spreads so wide.
Yeah. Why do they do that?
Because the federal government decided they needed a way to get a signal or a message all the way across the country in time of need. We don't have a national radio station like they have in some other countries. So they have these. So if there was a national emergency, if something went wrong, the government has the ability to send an emergency signal all the way across the nation. That's why those stations exist. That's also why they have more power on their transmitter than anybody else in the geographic area.
That seems like an unfair advantage.
Yes, I would agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there are other rules that you have to follow and some other things because you have some other federal guidelines. Like 9 times out of 10, the three mentioned radio station, three-letter call letters, radio station, will be the ones that will initiate things like our emergency broadcast testing that we do once a month, stuff like that. They originated to make sure that, hey, if they had a signal, it went out and it could get to all of us as well so that we could broadcast it. And part of the problem being if, I don't know, let's say that we had a disaster and the power goes out. There are hand crank radios that many people have in disaster kits, and those are all AM radios because that is the frequency that is going to be able to get through the crap.
Yeah, listen, when the aliens invade, it's AM radio. They're not coming on FM. It's AM radio that they tell you, hey, don't talk to the little green men.
Exactly, and don't put that in your mouth because you don't know where it's been. Yeah. So
is that AM radio?
I think so.
Feels like mom. So Salem here is working pretty closely with other partners like the National Association of Broadcasters, the National Association of State Broadcast Associations. I didn't know there was such a thing, but man, there's National Religious Broadcasters and the National Association of Farm Broadcasters to try to push back and convince Ford, I think, either not to do this or to encourage Congress to pass legislation that says, hey, just out of emergency necessity here, and let's keep this thing going.
There are about 4,000-ish AM radio stations across the country. And the vast majority of AM radio listening is done in travel or transit. And so most listeners consume AM radio in the car. And especially now that we have streaming platforms and things at home. And so this is a real issue for the industry. It would be almost like if we said, hey, how about we don't serve coffee in restaurants anymore? Like, wait a minute, there's a whole series of industries and businesses that are built on that.
But, you know, the reasons to not do away with it sound apolitical. Like, the emergency stuff, I get that. Like, you need to communicate. But the reasons to get rid of it may be economic, but, you know, there's a political undertone to this. My guess is there aren't very many Democrats that are going to be voting to require, vehicle makers. And I'm not a big fan of legislation to do that anyway, but motor vehicle makers to keep AM radios in because they're still smarting from Rush Limbaugh. They know that talk radio is the best vehicle to get out conservative talk anywhere, better than the internet. It's still a lot of folks, a lot of voters, and they'd love to see it die.
And they also want to make sure that the EVs are affordable and they don't want to add in an extra cost. That'll be the other thing that they'll lean into.
I just wonder how much extra cost, really.
I know. I don't know how much it would take to shield to shield it inside of the EV and how much interference there is. But the biggest thing would be if they were really super, super duper worried about it across both aisles, then you start funding and allowing AM radio stations to change over to DAB, the digital audio broadcast, what they're doing in Europe.
In Europe, they have stuff like the product we put out, like local talk radio, but it goes over this DAB. Yeah. Why wouldn't they do that anyway, Billy?
Money. Same thing here. Money.
I mean, it would cost a lot for us to transition to DAB?
Yeah, it would. It would be. It's any. I don't know if you've been paying attention.
I really don't.
Most of the radio companies don't want to spend the money on extra stuff.
Wait,
what? It's surprising.
I have a polo I'm wearing that says otherwise, my friend.
I've got a jacket that says otherwise, but I only have one of them. So again, that's kind of the thing.
One polo too. Yeah.
Exactly. So back in the day, we got several of things. But that's part of it as well. Is one of the things that I found very interesting. This is on a different note. Is the current CEO of iHeart was trumpeting how much they're going to try and use AI to replace their on-air broadcasters because...
What? Who said that?
The CEO of iHeart said that they're going to try to use that as much as possible to get AI to replace their on-air broadcasters because it would help their profit margin. And pay attention to that because it wasn't about delivering you a better product. It wasn't about delivering you a better radio signal. It wasn't about delivering you better advertisers or getting more results for the advertisers or being a better part of the community. It was that we can make more money. So they'd never want to, do things to upgrade and to add money in. They will when necessary at this point, but especially if you're a publicly traded company, the stock owners want to know why you're not giving us the money and why do you keep spending it on the employees and your facilities and other stuff like electricity. They're mad about that. So that's part of it as well, is the companies are disincentivized to upgrade that type of a signal. And it would be a major investment.
I feel pretty certain, Billy, no AI yet created can do the kind of lowbrow humor that we do. There's no way to do that.
No, not all. And they can't do fart noises either.
They can't. Don't know. Yeah. Don't know if they can. So, they have electronic whoopee cushions. But I feel like we, for to the extent there's a market for what we do, and we think there is, I just don't think AI, I just don't think AI is going to be able to match what we do. Maybe they'll put out a better product. I don't know how they're going
to
do
it. Well, I've goofed with it, and it is awful. Trying to do radio stuff. It is really, really bad at it. And the problem is that AI, everyone thinks that it's, oh, this artificial intelligence is going to be thinking. Yeah. It's really just an advanced Google search.
Yeah,
it's
that's just
an advanced complete, you know, like the when you're typing a text message and it completes the word for you, that's all it is. It's just a really fancy form of that. And the AI broadcasters are only going to be as good as the person that is programming it. So if you don't have a person that is paying a lot of attention to it and massaging what is going on with that message, then you're going to have failures. And so it is going to be a crap show for a long, long, long time when they try to do it with...
when we get to AI massages, let me know. Because I want to see. I'm happy to give my feedback on those things.
I think AM radio is absolutely necessary. And I'm sorry that for the auto manufacturers, it's a little more expensive. But you're putting those really expensive lithium batteries in there. And that's not the most efficient thing in the world. Because anybody that's familiar with lithium batteries, they are very, very, very temperature sensitive. And that's one of the biggest problems in EVs is too hot, too cold, battery no worky. And so that cooling system is really what they're working on inside of there. So if they can work on the technology and make it so it's viable, they can absolutely turn around and shield the radio. That can be done. It's just more expensive to them, and they don't
Alexa
like the idea of more
expensive.
Alexa points
out, too, by the way, that these EVs don't carry spare tires. I didn't know that either.
No, they don't.
Because it's just too hard to jack up an EV or something like that?
I don't remember what the reason is, but it's just, I think it has to do with removing the wheel, how the wheel and the brake system and everything else. I think that's where it kind of falls apart. One of the genius things, I'm not a huge fan of Tesla's, but Tesla has this like distributor in there that is absolutely phenomenal. I don't know who designed it, but dude's a genius as far as how it regulates how the electronics are managed inside of that vehicle. It's one of the things that all of the other manufacturers are struggling with, because that thing, it's just it's an amazing piece of technology, and it's why Teslas are so far ahead of many other EVs out there.
Well, listen, we'll continue to talk about this AM thing. It's not going away. We want to make sure that we get the word out so that you have the ability to put pressure on the people that need to have pressure put on them to make the right decisions. I guess that'll be the last Ford that I ever own, I suppose, if they discontinue the AM thing. Let's cut away for a break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by the Smarty Smarts at Alpine Planning, our good friends for the Monday Talk, to make us all smarter and hopefully a little bit richer on the financial stuff. It's George Brockner on the George Show, 710 KNUS. It's Steve Miller and me, George Brockler, right here on the George Show, 710 KNUS. It's going to fly like an eagle right to the VIP line to be joined, as we always are on Mondays, with our good friend Amy Duncan from Alpine Planning. Amy, how are you?
Well, not bad for a Monday, George. How about yourself?
Pretty good. We had a baseball weekend, and I wish the boys had gotten through the quarterfinals, but they played well otherwise. Still looking for us to end up on the top of the podium, you know?
There you go. There you go. Great American Game.
Speaking of Great American Games.
Big baseball fan myself. A little known fact that grew up every night of my life playing long toss with my dad in the front yard.
Oh, awesome.
Anyway.
Wait, hold on. Did you ever do the yard darts, Amy? The jarts? Steel-tipped?
Not familiar with those.
Oh, my God. Yeah, they've made them safe now, so they're lame. But you would wing these things up 10, 20,000 feet if you could, and they came down with the force of gravity plus 10, and they would stink. You know, they'd sink into the ground 1 or 2 inches. Nobody ever thought, what if this hit a kid in the head? You would just sort of move on. But nonetheless, it would have been wonderful fun. I'm sorry to distract. Amy, what's going on in the financial world?
Yeah, we'll jump in. Right now, we got the Dow off about 50 points. S&P trading positive, but not by much, and the NASDAQ up this morning. Coming off last week, all three indices did finish in the green, and this is the first positive week of numbers for the Dow and the S&P in May. In fact, the NASDAQ actually was up 3% last week. So, as I like to say, we got markets up, the volatility index is down, and the debt ceiling debate is right on the doorstep.
Uh-huh.
So, I am going to dive into this for a second, George, because it's going to be the complete narrative this week. You know, a lot of people are thinking that the Fed chief is going to pause on raising rates again in June. But right now, all eyes on the debt ceiling. It has been raised 42 times in history. Of course, the camps are really very divided on
there's
no way the U.S. is going to default on the debt versus, you know, the extreme trepidation. Kind of if you think back to 2011 when they downgraded the U.S. debt, and that was really almost part of, you know, kind of the lost decade because markets tumbled big time during that last debate. So the debt limit is set by Congress, of course, and when it's reached, the so-called ceiling must be raised or suspended if the Treasury Department is to avoid a potentially disastrous default. So it's a fiscal roof that just moves higher and higher. Right now we're at about $31.4 trillion.
Ooh.
And, of course, included, we've got Medicare, Social Security, you know, military spending, the Department of Defense, veterans benefits. I mean, this just goes on and on. And, again, the divided camps on where money should be spent. I think it really actually, George, needs to be about revenue versus expenditures. But without getting too terribly deep, you know, again, at Alpine Planning, our job is to make sure that clients can survive debates like this and market volatility that ensues because of it. I think that as long as people are having a good, solid portfolio approach and communicating with their advisor, then we shall get through this. But it's going to be a big week and potentially some big market swings as we see where the negotiations go.
Look, June 1 is right around the corner. If I asked you to place a bet with your money, not your clients, with your money, do we get this thing done by June 1st? I mean, is this a game of chicken that has to end with a deal?
Well, so I don't think we're going to default is the first answer, right, George?
Yeah.
Whether it's an extended deadline and a bunch of, you know, as we say, kicking the can down the road. But, you know, I mean, there's recess for the Senate right now, for goodness sake.
I know,
and by the time they write up a bill, and people actually review it, which is, you know, part of the problem, of course, in Washington is you get a 5,000-page bill and no one actually reads it or can act
True.
On it in time.
Oh, Amy.
So there's a lot of dynamics. You know, there's this you know, committee that's been appointed to solve the problem and, of course, meet with President Biden.
I think the problem is again. I talked to you right into the last few seconds of the show. Okay, forgive me.
You're fine, George. It's a little bit too big of a conversation
forgive me, yeah.
for our statement.
Alpine Planning Group is a comprehensive financial planning firm committed to improving your long-term success. Investing's a matter of trust. They're prepared to earn yours. Call them. Do it. 303-843-0918. 303-843-0918. Thanks, Amy.
Securities and investment advisory services offered through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc. Member FINRA SIPC and registered investment advisor. Alpine Planning Group and Woodbury Financial Services, Inc. are not affiliated entities. 14 West Dry Creek Circle, Littleton, Colorado, 80120.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never before seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to salemnow.com. Salemnow.com.